and welcome to Raising a Pro. I'm Annie Apple, journalist and NFL mom to my son, Eli Apple. Today, we are recapping the 2020 NFL season. Yes, we are reliving this historical year. And I am elated to have two of my favorite Raising a Pro guests with me today to talk all things NFL and 2020. I know some of us want to forget 2020, but we're going to relive it today. Yay! And what a season it was. And these ladies are just hilarious, and I adore them so much. I have Audrey Garrett, mom of Cleveland Browns star defensive end Myles Garrett, and Robin Burrow, mom of 2020 NFL number one overall pick of the NFL draft, Cincinnati Bengals' own quarterback, Joey Burrow. Get ready for the most fun you'll have all day. My friends, the lovely Audrey and Robin. So let's welcome our two ladies. First of all, let's go to Audrey. Audrey, you're in Texas. You guys are experiencing a traumatic snowstorm. People are just living without water, electricity, pipes bursting. I mean, you see the pictures. It's like, is this 2021 or is this 1821? How are you and your family doing, Audrey?
Well, fortunately for us, we are actually doing very well. Annie, thank you for having me again. I really enjoyed doing your show before. So let me say that. I feel like it's just a continuation of the pandemic. I mean, so I haven't been one to run out very much. We were impacted by having no water and we're just crossing our fingers to get to the weekend because it is Texas and it'll be 65 degrees by this weekend. So hopefully, hey, we're not built for this.
So when the snow is melting, get some pops out there and get some more.
Well, you know what? My husband has been married 30 years. He always rags me about having too much stuff. And he ain't went without at all because Audrey can dig out, you know, bottled water and cases that I done hid somewhere. And of course, I got cases of wine for myself. He need water, but I need wine.
That's the other pandemic, the mommy juice.
So, you know, for the most part in our household, we have fared well, but Texans as a whole, they are struggling. This right here, the city is shut down. There's no bread on the shelves, no water to be sold. It's like the pandemic all over again. No toilet paper. It is a struggle for Texans. We're not built for this.
It really is. Let's bring in Robin. Robin, it's so great to have you. You were one of my first guests on Raising a Pro, and I just absolutely adore you. First of all, before we get into this NFL season recap, how is our boy Joey doing?
Joey is doing really well. Thank you. And good morning, Annie. Thanks for having me again. I was so excited to get your message. Thank you for having me on. Yeah, Joe's doing great. He obviously had the injury right before Thanksgiving. Traveled to California, did his surgery, did some rehab out there. And he's been back in Cincinnati now rehabbing for, gosh, I guess it's a little bit over a month. And it's doing really well. He's doing upper body workout this whole time. He's been doing upper body and he's starting to do some running already, which I think is amazing considering how it was a pretty nasty injury. So we were very happy. Dr. Neil Elitrash out in California in LA did the surgery and did an amazing job. And he and his whole team did a great job of the rehab out there and got Joe back to his house in Cincinnati, back to his new home in Cincinnati quickly. And now the Bengals have been rehabbing him. So spirits are high and we're moving forward.
You know, let's go back to that day, though, because I remember when I saw that. And my heart went out to you right away because it's like, it's so funny because we were moms and, you know, this is rookie year. And the mom in me felt like Robin was like, y'all give me my baby back. If y'all going to act like, give me my son back. I told you, Joey, not to be playing this game. Boy, let's go home. We are going home. We're taking our ball and whatever's left of us and we going home. Give me my baby back.
You know, I'm on the other side because I hit her baby. My baby hits her baby. So I always feel bad when Miles sacks a quarterback and he lays there for a minute because Miles is a heavy dude. And I wouldn't want him putting his force of his weight on my baby. I'd be mad at it. I see, Robin, we've never met, but I'd be hot. I don't even want to look at you. It's like, my baby hits your baby. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Robin Kevin, is there anything you want to say to Audrey Garrett? Because her son does, he goes after your boy. Tell her off right now.
And he went after him a few times this year, I remember, but that's okay.
I'm sorry. That's all I got is one mom to another. I'm sorry from the bottom of my heart.
No, Robin, I'm not letting you off the hook. What do you want to say to Audrey Garrett? You have her here. You tell her what's on your mind.
I represent all defensive moms. I represent all the defensive moms. Just lay it on me because we punish your child. So lay it on me. I'll take it for all the defensive moms. Go ahead.
I'm not going to lie. I honestly think, hey, they've all chosen this for themselves. Joe, he wanted to be a quarterback and it's the life he's chosen. So he better have swift feet and agile moves and get out of the way is what he needs to do. Because your boy is getting paid to do what he's doing. So that's the way it goes.
Oh, my God.
No, Robin said, Joey, you chose this life.
And Joey's going to come back and say, Mama, I ain't built for this. I mean, because be like Texas. I'm not built for this.
No, seriously, going back to that day, honestly, Robin, what was that moment like for you? Because this was such a year of great expectations, great anticipation, and just great excitement. So in that moment, what was that like? Because that was such a gruesome injury that, I mean, my uterus, you know what I mean? Like, the mommy, my uterus hurt.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
It did. Yeah. Yeah. It contracted a bit like he was still in the womb. Yeah.
You know, I think we were so hopeful for the second half of the season. Joe was, you know, he really felt like they were hitting a good stride and really starting to come into their own and getting their timing down on routes and stuff. So he was so excited about the second part of the season, which is basically what that game in Washington was, the beginning of that. And so that was the most heartbreaking part of it more than anything. You know, that week we thought we were going to get to go to that game. And then like on Monday or Tuesday of that week, they said, no, we're not going to do fans. And so we were just watching it on TV like everybody else. And so that was hard. That was the hardest thing, I think, because we didn't know 100% what was going on for a little while. But the Bengals were awesome. They called right away and kept us posted on x-rays and all of that. So that was nice.
How do you sit there when your baby is like laying there as a quarterback? How do you sit there and wait for that phone call? That would scare me more than, I mean, and you saw the injury, like we saw the injury, and you're like,
well, yeah.
How did you sit there? What were your emotions? I'm sorry, I'm being the interviewer, Annie.
No, go ahead. You're the defense mom who brings the pain, and you're going to ask her, how do you handle the pain at home? But go ahead, Robin.
Next time I'll think about you, Audrey, and thinking that mama raised her boy mean. I don't know.
That's it.
Honestly, I think I was like ready to just, I just went and started throwing stuff in a bag. And I was like, we're going, we're on the road. I don't know where we're going yet, but we're either going to Washington, D.C. or we're going to Cincinnati because we didn't know if he'd be able to fly. But, you know, it's, you guys know, you know, as moms of athletes, you just react as quickly as you can and try to get to them as fast as you can. So,
you know what, since we're on the subject of injuries, let's go into that really quickly, because this past season, the 2020 season, was the season of injuries, right? We had Saquon Barkley suffered a season-ending ACL tear in week 2. I remember interviewing his mom on Raising a Pro, and Tanya was just like, they also had to watch that on television. And, you know, so it's always hard, but you take the lessons. That was her thing, was like, you know, just to help him rehab, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally, because we know when injury happened, there's always the threat of you not being able to do what you've done since you were a kid. Right. And that's the hardest part, you know, and for Joe, really quick, before we go into the other, how was his mental, like how was his emotional? Because there's one thing physically, they're repairing it, but emotionally, it kind of shakes you a little bit. How was he emotionally handling that?
Well, I think, you know, initially, once we had a good solid diagnosis of what the full extent of the injury was and heard from Dr. Elitrosh, I mean, he was so positive and reassuring from the get-go as far as his confidence that they could put Joe back together, you know, if not the same better, honestly. You know, it's...
He sounds like the bionic man. Put him back together.
Yeah.
I know, we're putting back together.
Better than it was
Humpty
before.
Dumpty. We're putting back together.
I mean, it sounded like the intro for the $6 million man. They could put him back together better and greater.
And then made him better.
So now we really have a $6 million man out there that my child got to chase down. That's an unfair advantage. That's an unfair advantage.
Just tell Miles to slow down a little bit. So we have Saquon Barkley. Then we have Dak Prescott, who suffered a season-ending compound fracture and dislocation of his right ankle. And watching that, I'm telling you, my whole heart is just, that was hard to watch.
Awful.
Because he was having a phenomenal season.
Yeah.
That was a Joe Theismann watch. I mean, if you saw the Joe Theismann, the hit by Lawrence Taylor several decades ago.
Oh, you went way back.
Yeah, that was one of those, even the defensive players were shattered.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that, and I'm a Cowboy fan. I mean, and you know, I laugh and tell you this because, you know, Dawn is your best friend and Zeke, you know.
Yes.
But that was numbing to all the players on the field. It no longer becomes us and them. It's a we.
Of course.
It could have been any of them. And just watching that, I know Dak's mom is no longer with us, but that was a mighty struggle as a mother, as a human. And football became so secondary in my thought process for him. And it was the same way with Joe. For a second, you know, I did not see him as an adversary. I saw him as somebody's child. And that was scary for me. I don't know how these really catastrophic injuries that occur, that they're visible. You know, it's one thing to tear your ACL because it's internal. That Dak Prescott was visible. It was like,
you saw it. Mm. Like, why do we, how do we do this? How do we continue to do this? It's because it's a lot.
How do people keep signing their kids up for football is what trips me out. I mean, I know my son plays, but if I'd had it my way, my husband and I, we would prefer Miles to play baseball. He was bored in the outfield, though. He would hit home runs, but he was completely bored in the outfield. So, you know, we would have preferred he golfed.
Yeah.
I mean, anything.
But this is what they love, right? And like Robin said, this is the life they chose. And then we had, but on Cleveland, you had Odell suffer season-ending injury.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, yeah.
That was during our game. Yeah, that was awful, too. I mean, that's just devastating. It just... You just pray for him.
You know, it didn't even look like a bad injury. He went up in the air, kind of came down, but it didn't look like he was going to be out for the rest of the season. It had such a terrible injury. That's the scary part. You have injuries that are not seen that can end a guy's year or career.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, and we also have Tyron Smith, Lael Collins of the Dallas Cowboys, Ronnie Stately, tackle. We have Baltimore Raven, Dorin Jones. We have, I mean, Christian McCaffrey.
Wow.
We had Anthony Barr. There are so many injuries. And there are different reasons people were saying, well, why do we have this many injuries? Because they didn't have OTAs. They didn't have... I know personally that, you know, during the offseason, the guys will work out and condition on their own. But everything got shut down. Like, everything just got shut down. I don't know if it's so much. Yes, I think maybe not having that conditioning may have been part of it. I just feel like football is just one of those sports where injury happened because you've been using this body for years.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What is your take? I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on television. But what is your, you know,
you did stay at
a
Holiday Inn Express last night.
I think the break should have done them well.
Thank you. I felt the same way.
They got to rest their bodies.
I thought the break should have given their bodies that rest. Yeah.
Yes.
And I, you know, bodies have muscle memories as athletes. You have muscle memory. And so that's how they're able to then take a long break and then kick back in. So I think it was just, unfortunately, 2020. I'm going to blame it on the year.
It was the curse of 2020.
Yeah, the curse of 2020.
The COVID curse.
Yeah.
The injury curse. Now we've got the curse of 21. I mean.
No, 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 no. We're not cursing 21 yet. No.
Listen, woman, you in Texas with pipes busting and people in line for bottles of water.
That's okay. That's okay. Because we are not going to claim 20. Honey, after 2020, all 2021 had to do is show up.
It's literally a sequel at this point right now.
No, ma'am. I'm not claiming that. You go to the movies and watch your sequel. I'm changing mine. This is a whole new movie. No, ma'am. Mm-mm.
Tell us about when Miles caught COVID. Because first of all, the guys were tested like every day. Their poor nostrils. Hunty. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't even deal. I can't deal. How was it for him when he caught that COVID?
You know what? The funny thing is, this disease or pandemic or virus or whatever you want to call it is so crazy because his girlfriend lives with him. Yeah, I said that out loud. Mm-hmm. his girlfriend lives with him. And she was hugged up on him, sleeping with him. The whole nine yards, she got nothing.
In the same bed.
And, oh, yeah, that part. In the same bed. My baby. My baby.
Your baby in the bed?
With the girl?
Oh, my
God. That's a bunk bed, right? That's a bunk bed.
That's a bunk bed, exactly. With sleeping bags and stuff in between and all that. But she was kissing him, like, before the game. And yet, she never tested positive. He has a friend who lives up there with them. He never tested positive. Miles was positive all by himself. So this virus is so crazy. But for him physically, because he has asthma and a history of bronchitis, when I tell you that joker couldn't breathe and watching my child have to get oxygen on the sideline and be kneeling down and trying to breathe and still go out there and be the man for his team. I was the mother who was over here. Y'all need to let my baby go. It ain't worth it. That part right there, he turned into 5-year-old Miles for me, and he never recovered the rest of his win for the season. That was a struggle for me because I watched him go out there after the game. He would be exhausted the next day and really not kind of get out of bed because it was such a struggle in his chest, and it was horrible with the comorbidities of asthma and bronchitis. Mm.
Well, I know with Eli, he was, you know, it was such a weird offseason because I felt like that was 2020 was his free agency year, and it just nothing, everything was just crazy. And when he finally signed with, you know, with the Panthers and going into the season, and he was still having some injury issues and, you know, kind of trying to be forced to play before your body tells you you're ready. So when they finally cut him and he called me, I was like, honey, it's not a bad thing when somebody who's not good to you breaks up with you.
True story.
But anyway, when he got back, you know, I had him go see a doctor. We did everything we needed to do. And he was just rehabbing. And the way I have to be honest, it was a COVID year. So I was, my mommy head, I was glad to have him home. In my own mom way, I was like, my God, he's been at this since middle school. Rest your body. And he rested his body. And now, you know, free agency's coming again, so he's very excited to get back out there. But honestly, that was, you know, good for me. I kind of to have him just be home and just resting because it was a crazy year.
I understand.
Yeah.
Robin, you're part of history because you were part of the first ever virtual draft. Please share that experience again for us because, I mean, you're in the history books.
It's crazy, isn't it? It was, honestly, I felt bad for Joe initially just because he wasn't going to get to experience the whole huge hoopla. And it was supposed to be in Vegas. I mean, we had almost 100 people, friends, relatives, people that we didn't even necessarily know women were coming to Vegas for the draft.
Wait a minute, hold on. But were you going to do the draft and have the hundreds of people there? Or were you going to do a private party and have those people?
We would have done a private party. You know, I mean, this was before COVID. We started planning this before COVID, obviously. But then once that all happened, then there's, you know, you can't do anything. So it went from what we thought was going to be a huge celebration with everybody known to man to the three of us in our living room. It was great. The NFL sent us all the cameras and went through the process and walked me through how to set them all up. And we did several different little dress rehearsals, even though it wasn't really, we didn't dress for it or anything, but you know, it was just really weird. And then he sat in front of a camera for almost 2 hours afterwards, just doing all of his interviews. So, you know, it was just kind of weird. I'm disappointed he couldn't celebrate with all of his friends, but it was good. I mean, how can you complain about being the number one overall draft pick, no matter where you are. So not complaining at all.
It's so funny because I remember watching it and it was just you guys and just sitting there with Joe. And I'm just like, wow, this is the hottest, you know, draft ever from Vegas to your living room.
I'm so sorry. It's not funny, Robin. I'm sorry.
It's true. I mean, it was awful.
But you know what, though? When COVID is finally gone in 2033, you know what I mean? We can go back to Vegas and relive that. You know what I mean?
That's right.
You know what the sad thing is? It was just like Joe got, when you think of all the people that got robbed of their situations in 2020, whether it was can you imagine not seeing Joe walk across the high school stage after being 18 and graduated from high school, all those high school seniors.
Yeah, graduations.
Yes. You know, I didn't go to prom, so I didn't care anything about somebody who missed the prom. I mean, but I was thinking about those parents who, just like you, his was the number one pick of the draft. That's once in a lifetime. It was the high school senior who may not be going any farther, who may not be going to college. You know, those missed opportunities. We can laugh about three people in your room, you know, if you want, in your living room sitting there. But like you said, number one pick of the draft, how do you complain? Some people get nothing else.
That's true. There were so many missed opportunities last year, and I can't imagine, like you said, Joe having, if he would have had to have missed his senior year of high school, or if it had all happened the year before, if COVID had come the year before and he had missed his last year at LSU. I mean, that was a once in a lifetime,
right?
Crazy season that everything just aligned the right way. I mean, he wouldn't have even been close to where he is now. So, you know, we're very thankful. Yes, it's a high hill to climb and we had missed opportunities, but compared to other people, we can't complain at all.
Well, you know what? One day when ESPN does a 30 for 30 on the virtual draft, you'll be able to relive it. You know, they're going to send makeup and hair, people come in and they'll do a movie. And Robin, they'll do a movie by the first virtual draft. Who should play you? Ooh.
Sandra Bullock. Sandra Bullock.
I love Sandra Bullock.
I love her too, but she's not pretty enough to play my Robin. Got to get somebody else.
For pity's sake. I love Sandra Bullock.
I love her too. So I'm
like, okay, so Sandra Bullock would play you. Who would play Joey? Everybody says he looks like Macaulay Culkin from Home Alone.
That's disrespectful.
So, in Home Alone, not Macaulay Culkin. Though. Later on with the struggles. I'm talking about Home Alone.
I can totally see where they're coming from, but that's just not my, that would not be my that first would not, choice. Okay.
Liam.
Ooh.
Hemsworth.
That boy's fine.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I don't know actors' names very well. I don't really get into all that, but.
Thor. Thor's little brother.
Thor.
Liam is Thor's little brother. Yeah. Or we can get Chris.
Yeah. Chris Hemsworth is Thor. And then Liam Hemsworth is the younger brother.
Is his little brother.
Yeah. Let me just put it like this. Both of them are fine.
I'll let you guys do the casting. Okay.
Okay. I can do that.
Who should play your husband? Who's going to play your husband, Robin?
Matthew McConaughey, maybe?
She said Matthew McConaughey.
I was thinking Matthew McConaughey too. And I was sitting there, no, not my husband. So let me close my mouth.
That might work.
Okay, we just cast the movie.
See?
So looking back over 2020, let's ask you each, starting with Robin, what was your favorite moment of the year? It doesn't even have to be with your son, just generally, because, you know, as football fans, what was your favorite moment when you look back on the 2020 season?
You know, I think seeing Joe have joy in playing, like when they finally got their first win and saw, you know, seeing him out there with energy and having a good time and chawing it up with the players. And it looked like he was just kind of getting his groove, you know, the Joe that we know, the Joe that we enjoy watching, and was kind of enjoying it rather than everything in his head, you know, like that. And I don't even remember what game that was. That's terrible. But it was in Cincinnati. It was a win. It was the first win.
We know all about that in Cleveland. So yes.
You had your first postseason win since Moses parted the Red Sea in Cleveland. Am I correct?
Petty. You want some petty.
What? It's not petty. It's just it's
1994.
On my
1994.
Moses parted the Red Sea. And Cleveland. See, yeah. So you know you're what?
And that's actually my favorite moment because the city was so gosh darn happy. Girl, when I say the city, it was just the city. And Miles can't go anywhere. You know, he's not that black dude that looks like everybody else's black dude. He his face is a little different. And so he can't go anywhere without, you know, I've seen guys that look like Baker Mayfield. Miles is Miles. One, he's huge.
There's like 12 guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the same block in Cleveland that look like Baker.
But Miles being 6'5 and 275, he does not look like anybody else walking down the street. And then the hair and, you know, and so the joy that they have in just running up and congratulating him and thanking him for being a part of bringing, you know, football, winning football back to Cleveland was just like that was my best moment. It was more cumulative than one situation, but the playoff game just encapsulated. Yeah, that was great.
And I think what I love both about not just Cleveland, but also Cincinnati was that it was every game, it got better. Right. It just like every moment because that's what football is about. It's about improving. It's about getting better. People don't understand. They, you know, we live in a microwave generation. Everybody want everything 10 seconds. It doesn't happen that way. Development takes time. Cohesiveness takes time. You know, synergy, all that stuff takes time. And it seemed like everybody, especially Cleveland, they were all just coming together at the right time. So when I look back, some of my favorite moments and let me know what you think. I love the Hail Mary. Kyle Murray throwing that 43-yard to Hail Mary to first of all, DeAndre Hopkins' hands is so big. That boy's hands is large enough. And the way he just went up and grabbed that ball, that one was like such an unforgettable moment.
But you know, Kyler's from here and Kyler is undefeated in high school. So as Texans, we knew Kyler was the bomb diggity. Y'all, the nation really is just finding out who Kyler Murray is. And then he went down and spent a year at Texas A&M. So we got to see his growth there. And then he went to Oklahoma. So it was, you know, y'all are just getting to taste Kyler Murray. He's been doing stuff like that since high school.
But let me tell you, what was funny is because I interviewed his mom on the show and she said that he had started off as a quarterback. He was always a quarterback. Then when he got to high school, like ninth grade, he decided he didn't want to play anymore. He just didn't want to play. And so, you know, she did everything to get him back to play. She was like, I even made up a dream that I had where I saw his father. And his father said, go play. You know what I mean? And his deceased father is usually like, go play. And he still didn't want to. So when he finally came back to play, I think his sophomore year or so, part of the punishment was they were like, no, you're no longer the quarterback. You got to be the wide receiver. And he just took to it and he was just like, okay, to prove everybody wrong. And he ended up being one of the like amazing wide receivers. So it's just weird how that became. But that pass stood out for me. Alex Smith coming back after that injury to play for the Watcher Football. What was your, I mean, especially Robin, watching what he went through and seeing him back there as a quarterback mom, Robin, how did that make you feel?
Oh my gosh. I was so happy for him and his family. Just seeing his wife and his kids sitting in the stands. That was amazing. I don't know if you guys have watched that documentary on him. Oh my goodness. If you haven't watched that documentary on ESPN, unbelievable what he's gone through. And, just so proud of him and happy for his family that he could come back and even just walk normally, let alone persevere and excel at such a high level after that injury. It was unbelievable.
Can I be honest with you? I was very happy, first of all, just to see him walking again and just excited to see him out there. But a part of me also felt my heart went out to his wife because I couldn't imagine the nerves, right? After watching your husband go through what he went through and just the extensive of the injury and then the recovery and the whole coming back, I would be like, especially after his career, I would be like, honey, can you retire? Because it's a lot. Every time he went out there, every time he got hit, I don't know how she did it.
I don't know how she did it either.
And the kids too, like every time dad, like how do you, I couldn't do it.
I mean, can you imagine how much energy it took from their whole entire family to get through that. You know, I mean, that's his perseverance, yes, but his family's perseverance and keeping him, helping him to stay motivated and keep his spirits up on the down days, and then him keeping their spirits up on the down days. And I just really can't believe that he was able to come back.
But then going back out there to play again, suppose that happened again, then you taking your family through the whole trauma. I don't know. It's just like my heart. Yeah.
But you know what? No, you know what? That goes back to what Robin said initially. That's what they sign up for. And they've been playing this for a long time.
But he loves the game, and you know.
Yeah. And so it's hard to tell when a person isn't ready. It's hard to tell them to stop. That's why Tom Brady is still doing what Tom Brady's doing, you know, because his mind and his body has not yet let his mind down. His mind tells him he can still be a winner. And that Super Bowl said he still can be a winner. And until you can't dictate for an athlete when it's time to give up the cleats, the ball, the, you know, whatever the sport is, you can't tell an athlete, even their body betraying them is not enough. Until the mind and the body get in sync, it's you're going to have an athlete that gets out there and puts it on the line every time.
Well, let's talk about Tom Brady, because Tom Brady left the Patriots after 49 years.
I cannot do you, Annie. This it's too early in the morning.
So he left them after 57 years, and he came to Tampa, right? And we all thought it was an experiment, right? I don't know what the expectations were, because when the season started, they were like 7-5. Tom was throwing as many interceptions as Jameis Winston did. You know, he was yelling at people on the side. It was just a lot, right? But this team came together at such a point. And I know everybody's giving Tom Brady the credit, but let me tell you something. That Tampa Bay defense kept them, because there were many times Tom Brady was really trying to give that game away by giving that ball away. And that defense did not give up. But who, I mean, Miss Cleo, God rest her soul, I don't think she could have predicted that Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Bucks were going to beat the Saints. You know what I mean? To be able to, because the Saints beat them twice in the regular season, make it to the Super Bowl. We're not even getting to the point of them winning the Super Bowl. Let's get to them making the Super Bowl. How shocked were you guys that Tom Brady, 97 years old, won the Super Bowl again?
I'm not shocked.
I wasn't shocked either.
If you had laid some teams out there and asked me who I'd have put my money on, I'm going with Brady. I was going with Brady. And I'm not a Brady fan. I don't sniff his jockstrap, none of that stuff that they say. But Tom Brady is the GOAT.
I hope nobody's sniffing his jockstrap.
It's a whole bunch of folks riding his coattail to the championships. I'm sorry. When you have a winner's mentality, and from my understanding, he brings that into, he talks you up. When you have a motivator in your locker room, that motivation can take you to that next level. And Tom has a swag, an attitude, a history. Nah, I wasn't surprised. Mm-mm. Now, the only thing that took me by surprise was the fact that it turned around so quickly.
That's what I'm saying. Year one.
Well, and the fact that the Patriots went down so quickly.
Oh, we didn't even get to those yet. First losing season since 2000.
Yes. So how important was Tom versus how important is Bill Belichick? Really, which one carried the team? See, people thought it was a partnership, but that quarterback position, you will ride or die on your quarterback. You will ride or die. And it's what that quarterback brings into that locker room.
Yeah, it's all the moxie that comes with it. I mean, if true leaders exude confidence and it just soaks into everybody around, and everybody starts believing that they can't lose.
And it permeates the whole organization. It goes throughout the organization.
It does.
His teammates, Leonard Fournette, a lot of the guys were saying that Tom, during the week of the Super Bowl, would text him and say, "We're going to win. We're going to win." Like, you know, he would just really encourage him, "We're going to win." But let's look at the Chiefs, though. right? Kansas City. What happened?
I don't know what happened other than
Tom Brady.
I think Tom Brady just Tom Brady'd him.
Robin done turned Tom Brady into a verb, and I am here for it. They got Tom Brady.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
No, but
that's the Tom Brady effect.
No, but let's look at the quarterback, though. Patrick, I think he, you know, he wasn't 100%, but if you're out there, you can play. But it's like poor Patrick was like literally running for his life the whole game. So I guess, so I'm giving a lot of the credit to the defense. I really am giving a lot of credit to the Tampa Bay defense.
Yeah. And, you know, the defense did a great job. Kansas City's offensive line was banged up. You know, I don't know exactly how many players they had out. I think it was 3 or 4 of their linemen were either banged up or not playing at all, which...
But Robin, everybody's a professional.
Everybody's banged up at the end of the year.
Everybody's
yeah.
a exactly. professional.
At the same time, everybody's in the same boat by the end of the year, and you have to have enough players to step up and make plays no matter which, you know, where you are. And in that particular day, they just couldn't do it. And I love Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like, my whole heart. Love him and his family. And I felt bad for him, but I was also very happy for Tom Brady. I don't know the man at all, but how can you not love him?
He's 43 just, years old and still balling.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Patrick is the future. Tom is the past and the current. Now,
Tom will always be the future. Well, he ain't leaving.
Until he walks away.
He'll be back.
Well, well, you know, it's ironic because I'd have done a Peyton Manning. I'd have grabbed my ball and went home. And you go out on the Super Bowl, 43 years old. I'm grabbing my ball and going home. I'm like,
there's nothing else to prove.
He has nothing to prove, but other than go out here and just snatch your dreams.
Just snatch it. And I remember I met him once a few years ago after a Giants game, and I looked at him. I was like, I totally hate you because you never age. He's like, yes, I do. Like, I don't know what exfoliation he uses on his skin, but the man gets younger. He's like the Benjamin Button.
His wife is Giselle. Yeah, but look at Giselle. I mean, he's married to a supermodel. She giving him every face product known to man. Girl, child, please. You look good if you was married to Giselle. For real.
They're not breathing the same air as the rest of us. But congrats to, I mean, Tampa Bay Bucks are definitely champions. So let's talk about, because a lot of things that was in the league this year was all about the hiring and how minority coaches, it's just atrocious how many, you know, we don't have. And GM. So that was a big issue because we have, you know, Todd Bowles. We have Byron Leftwich, who was offensive coordinator for Tampa Bay. African-American. Bruce Arians did his thing, you know, with diversity on his team. But that's something that came up repeatedly this past season about NFL and Black coaches and hiring practice. What do you think the NFL can do better in making, in kind of closing that huge gap?
I will say this. My observation is that I'm going to give a rough number, and it's going to be high. 80% of all NFL players come out of college without a degree. In order to become a coach or be on a coaching staff, it's required that you have a degree. You've got to shrink the gap so that these young men are getting their education on top of the opportunities, because you can't have the barrier be non-degreed and let them come out early and then penalize them. Either the experience of being a Hall of Famer qualifies you to become a coach without a degree, because I would rather take a player who's played in the league 15, 20 years, well, not that long, except you're Tom Brady, and have them as my head coach without a degree than have a degreed player who did not have the quality of career. So you have a lot of players that don't qualify for coaching positions because they don't have degrees.
But there are a lot of white coaches who were not former players but still get to play. So my thing is, it shouldn't just be because you're a former player. We're talking about Black men, Black coaches who are not getting the same opportunity. And it really starts from college.
But if you look at, no, but Annie, if you look at those Black coaches, the ones that you named, they're former players.
Yes.
That went on to get their degrees. It's not a lot of young Black people who are coming into football who are non-players.
Non-players, right.
Exactly. The bulk of Black men coming back to NFL teams in non-player positions
tend to be former players.
Well, then maybe we need to change that, because when I look at a lot of the coaches, I'll give you an example. You know, there was a study, I don't have it in front of me, but it says that I think about 63% of the NFL coaching hire are all based on either somebody's father or somebody's son, nepotism. So all the coaches that you see, 63% of them, they were either somebody's son, somebody's father, mm-hmm. everybody got in the way. So I think that's a way we saw recently, even with Urban Meyer hiring Chris Doyle, who Iowa had to let go because more than a dozen black players complained about him. It's just, so what even I'm saying, worse. Like...
Even worse, your example on Twitter was Andy Reid and Andy Reid's son. Andy Reid's son had no business being a coach in role. So no, you don't. Let's go to the example you gave on Twitter. Let's use Andy Reid and Andy Reid's son.
You know, I'm still trying to get that man arrested for nearly killing two babies, but that's a whole nother show.
Two babies.
The man admitted he had two drinks and Adderall. You smell liquor on his breath. What do you need to get arrested for drunk driving? I'm sorry. When it comes to drunk driving.
He's Andy Reid's son. And that was nepotism.
And then they didn't even fire him. They put him on administrative leave on a Tuesday. Then a Wednesday, they said, oh, his contract expired.
But as long as you have nepotism in the front office and in leadership that dictates hiring based on the fact that, one, they've met the collegiate requirement to have a degree. And two, my daddy works for, or my uncle is. You're going to automatically exclude a portion.
Well, I didn't understand how Brett Reed got a job as a coach when you are a convicted serial driver of drivers, DUIs. Like, and you were also in prison for brandishing a weapon. And like, you have a whole, and he got promoted a couple of times since me. So I'm just saying, when it comes to hiring, we need to really open the door, and not because many coaches are hiring those they know and they feel comfortable with. That's the problem.
But you can't tell me that there was not a former NFL player out here who sought to coach for a team that whose experience did not exceed that educational boundary of Andy Reid's son.
Well, that's a whole nother show. And I'm about to get mad again. That man ain't gotten arrested. So we're going to move on. Robin, if you had to grade the NFL on how they did with the 2020 season and getting through it, what grade would you give them and why?
They did a pretty doggone good job. I'd have to probably give them an A.
Really?
I wouldn't go an A.
Go ahead, but go on, Robin. Tell us why they get A.
Now, I'm the school teacher. Hold on. Okay. I get to give grades.
I graduated summa cum laude, so let's see how we gonna get your A.
That's good. I think that's very good. But I think that you know, they did a great job of testing everybody repeatedly every day. You couldn't get in the facility if you weren't tested. They had their trackers so that if they did have a positive case, they knew who kids had come in contact with. I'm pretty sure that was league-wide, I'm assuming. I know the Bengals did. Did your kids have those trackers?
Yes. I think they all had contact tracing, but I think the Saints had different.
There weren't that many games that ended up being postponed or canceled. I just think they did a great job with it.
Yeah, they had no canceled games, definitely.
No canceled games.
A few postponement, but no canceled games.
And see, that's where they got an A-.
I'm sure that everyone learned from the process, but, you know, hopefully we don't have to go through a pandemic again.
I could, but you know what, Annie? I can't give them an A because I didn't think how they postponed some of the games based on the star players. Like they, you know, Lamar Jackson.
Remember when Denver Broncos didn't even have a quarterback?
Come on.
How did that happen? They played a game when they had no quarterback.
We had no wide receivers and we were required to play a game. We literally had no wide receivers. And yet they postponed the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was like, why could we can't get, we don't have nobody catch the ball. We had tight ends out there trying. It was ridiculous.
I remember.
On some of these machinations on who and when they postpone games, I was not quite happy with. So I would have given them a B+, an A- at best.
Okay.
Because they did a fantastic job, just like, you know, Robin said, but sometimes they made decisions in which you could see the favoritism based on the team's popularity in the league.
So Rob is giving them the A, you're giving them a B minus. When this pandemic started, everything changed. So kudos to the NFL because, you know, at first it was like, how can we even think about football right now? Like people are getting infected, you know, people are losing their jobs. But it was a much needed energy as far as giving people who experienced some joy watching the games that much joy. It was a lot because we didn't know how this virus affects athletes, you know, and I think we're still learning. We haven't completely figured that out yet. But they pulled off a season. Tom Brady won a Super Bowl. And it feels like regular NFL again. And the Patriots learned how to be losers again. So everything kind of...
She's so petty. I'm not.
Just petty. You know what I mean? First losing season since 2000. That's huge. So definitely, that's huge. Just in closing, and what you got for us in closing, starting with you, Robin, because you were a rookie mom and you know, after this season, you're no longer a rookie mom. What was your number one lesson as a rookie mom this year?
Oh, gosh. You know, changing from Saturday games to Sunday games. That's tough. We're coming from LSU, first of all, tailgating all day long before a game and then having night games, but having that recovery day afterwards before you have to go on back to work on Monday. That was my biggest and hardest thing to transition this year. So, and understanding that Joe's schedule is now a work schedule and he's a working professional now. And
he always was. He just wasn't getting paid for it. But go on, Robin.
Well, that's true. But, you know, it was just his attitude about going about the work and his recovery days. He was so diligent about what he ate and his sleep. And, you know, he was always very conscious of that. But once he hit the season, well, even just preparing for the season, he was just so much more conscious of everything that he put in his body. I couldn't, you know, go make biscuits and gravy every single weekend and my potato soup and, you know, everything else that he loved. It was just, you know, that part of it was different and putting him in a different light from being, you know, my little boy to now he's my young man. I'm not going to call him a big man yet, but it's coming.
And I mean, you guys went from a virtual draft to the pandemic. I mean, he's had the most unusual welcome to the NFL experience ever. But I know that Joey's going to do great things in this league. So we're definitely wishing him all the best.
Yes.
Appreciate that.
And Miss Audrey, just your parting words. I mean, Cleveland came out great season this year. Not, you know, didn't go as far as you like. But I'm glad Miles is healthy, you know, getting stronger and, you know.
We're just hoping next year to build on the season that he gets healthy from his COVID experience. He's still not 100%. And, you know, he's taking time right now just to rest and just kind of recuperate physically. It wasn't the body. It was the internal parts that really impacted him. So we just want the city of Cleveland to rest up and get ready for whatever context football looks like next year. I want the NFL to continue to put mandates in place that keep the players and the fans safe. We are still in the midst of a pandemic and we need to govern ourselves accordingly. Wear your mask. It's not about you. It's about people that can be saved because everybody cannot fight off this virus the way you possibly can. So it's not a political statement. It's not for argument. Just do it for safety's sake so that we can all go about our business and enjoy tailgating again next year and for the years to come. Because these kids, you know, that are coming up, as we talked about, Joe missed, you know, his draft and the way that he dreamed about it. He didn't miss it, just the way that it had dreamed about. And we are robbing our youth of an opportunity. We're changing how they're going to now enjoy some of the milestones in their lives. And you're robbing yourself of it. So do everything you can to be a part of the solution and not part of the problem. And it will flow over into football.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And from the bottom of my heart, thank you ladies for joining me. That is one of the best legal fun I've ever had. Not that I go around having illegal fun. I don't even know what illegal fun things are. Anyway, I'm still tripping on Robin's response to Joey being hurt. Of course, after the shock war, she's like, you chose this life. So, well, we're glad Joey's getting better. And I guess the clapback is the NFL 2020 comeback. That's right. The clapback is officially the comeback. There were some missteps along the way, but overall, the NFL, its coaches and players, were able to put an unforgettable season together in the midst of a whole pandemic. Ouch, my nostrils hurt just thinking about all those daily COVID tests the players had to undergo. You guys are really, really troopers. So as we prepare for a new season, prayers of healing, health, and success for all, both on and off the field. Special thanks to Audrey Garrett and Robin Burrow for joining me today, and yes, for the much needed laughs. And as always, thank you all for listening, following, rating, and reviewing. Remember, Raising the Pro is part of the Audio Boom Originals Network. And if you haven't rated or reviewed yet, please do so. I'd love the support. Don't be a hater, be a rater. I'll be back next week with another glimpse beyond the gridiron. See you next time, family.